right now? Oh, just amazing to see all of your faces. I'm just scanning the screen. I want to just sort of reach in and hug you all. Ah. All around the world. Just amazing. I love it. I love it. I love it. So we're going to talk about the flipped classroom. It was popular. A lot of you were keen to come and have a chat or to listen in to other people's experiences, and I guess expand your knowledge base in this area too. So I think we all kind of know what the flipped classroom means. I explained it in the email. I won't go into length regurgitating that. So how we're going to do this today is a bit like a facilitative technique I used in San Diego. Who was in San Diego? Hands up if you're in San Diego with us. Many? Well, not so many, actually, only three or four. Okay. Where I tried out something, I put a few people in the center of the room on a couple of couches, and there's probably five or six of them, and they talked about a particular topic that was sort of relevant to the whole group. But the five or six in the middle, they just started chatting about the particular topic. The rest of us sat around the outside of those couches. So the rest of the group, probably about 20 or so of us, sat around the outside, and we kept our mouths shut. And we just observed and we listened and we took notes if we wanted to. But we also thought about questions we might want to ask of those particular people. Now, the people in the middle in that case were the ones who had experience in that particular area. So I'm going to do the same again today. I've never done it before on Zoom. So you're the best group to try this out with. If it falls in a big heap, well, that's all right. We've all learned a lesson. But I think it'll go okay too. What we'll do in a minute is Sham's helping me a little bit with production. She's going to spotlight. I think we've got five here, have we, Sham? Have you? I'm just checking the who's here. Five of you who indicated that you have experience or some experience, or you're kind of heading down that track with the flipped classroom. So we're going to spotlight you and put you into the center of the room, so to speak. And I'm not going to be there asking questions. I'm not going to be a compere or anything like that. I just kind of want you in the middle to start talking about the flipped classroom. Whatever comes to mind, you can ask each other's questions. You can just talk about your experience. You can go wherever you like with it. And we'll go with that for about 20 to 25 minutes, roughly. I will interject at some point there. And the rest of us, we will literally listen in intently and we'll jot down any questions we might have, because at about 30, well, about 5 past 9 my time, roughly, we'll open it up to questions and I'll tell you how to do that at the time. All good? Pretty simple, isn't it? Pretty basic. Okay, so Sham, could you please help spotlight the wonderful people who are going to start chatting about the flipped classroom?
One by one, yeah.
Yeah, while she's doing that, Mr. Morgan is one. He's got a bunch of experience with it. Jimbo in Taipei, thank you very much. There we go. Steve in the UK. Mr. Frampton.
One. There we go.
And Mr. Tim Higgs is in Sydney.
Yep, I think
I think
you've got them
yep.
all.
It's an all male cast today. We
Well, I think Jackie, would you consider joining us, Jackie?
I'm happy with that too.
Sorry, who,
I did
me?
have I did have two other
Yeah.
I did have
I
two
don't
other ladies identified who said they had experience, but unfortunately neither of them's turned up tonight. So these things happen. That's okay.
think I know about flipped classrooms, Steve.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, I do?
That's, yeah, I'm sure you do. I'm sure it's a lot of what you do. Peter, I'm going to risk contradicting something you said. I think it's really important to start with a definition. I know it was in the email, but a lot of water under the bridge in my life since I read that email. And I think to have a common start point might save us a bit of confusion.
Okay. Yeah, no problemo. Oh, I've been spotlighted too. That's exciting. Okay. And I think there are different ways of viewing this, and I think that'll come up in the conversation, to be honest. But when I sent that out, it was actually purely selfish when I sent that first email out, because I'd got together with our Think on Your Feet network, the one that we, you know, day to day spend most of our time working with, and we were talking about the future of the product, and up came the idea or topic of the flipped classroom. And when that was explained to me, and in fact, I believe it was you, Tim Higgs, wasn't it, that brought that up. And so Tim, actually, why don't you just take it from there? What in your mind, when you put that up on our brainstorming session, what did you think of the flipped classroom?
So the flipped classroom dates back to about 2008, or probably a little bit before that, with a guy called Sol Khan over in the States. He's originally, I think, from Pakistan or India or somewhere like that. But he was basically tutoring some of his family members who were on the other side of the States. And so what he'd do is he'd film the body of his training, and then when he'd get together with them, he'd then go through and do exercises with them and answer any questions that they had or see how they related to the videos and so forth. And it just became such a useful piece of work that he started to develop it and spread it. And then Bill and Melinda Gates got behind it. And so the Khan Academy was born in about 2008. And pretty much most universities and tertiary education providers work on that basis these days. And so commercial training is a little bit behind that, in that they don't all work on that. And actually, Michael and I were having a chat about this today. We've already had a meeting today in person. Don't tell Gladys about that. We live 100 metres up the road from each other and ended up going down to a cafe and pretending that we just bumped into each other. But and we were talking about that and, you know, some of the pluses and minuses of doing it. But the reason why I put it up there, because I have built it for a number of organizations, flipped classroom types of delivery, and it's worked very well, but it does have some problems associated.
Yeah, so. And I think traditionally that flipped classroom was, you know, self-directed learning prior to seeing someone live or having a live session, whether that be face-to-face or virtual. That was how it started. I think nowadays, certainly you can think of it as anywhere along the learning journey too, I suppose. So, you know, you might start with live, but then, you know, use self-directed or, you know, pre-recorded material along the way to supplement that learning. Okay.
And Peter, so, just to be clear, you've got Tim's confession on the recording, yeah, just in case we need anything from him later.
Absolutely. So I'm not hung up on a particular definition, but it's about using pre-recorded stuff that people can stop, start, rewind, pause, what have you, and to complement or supplement or to enhance the learning, you know, whatever the case might be along the way. And it's always combined with a live session as well, where you
say something about that, Pete, is that it's not augmenting in classroom training. It is actually flipping the idea of the way that the body of work is delivered. And that, what you just said, becomes an advantage of it in that you can, you know, slow it down, fast forward, you can go over it again and all of those kind of things. But the idea is that the body of learning comes from the videos, and the what has previously been a teacher, tutor, trainer, whatever you'd like to call them, now becomes a facilitator. And is able to you know, foster learning in a different way than what was traditional.
Could I give what I think is one example of flipped learning? For those who don't know me, I'm Michael, and head up a company called Herman International in Asia. So we're about whole brain thinking, and our main product is the HBDI, which is an instrument. Now, prior to COVID, our most popular workshop was a workshop that we called Start Thinking, because that's what we're about. And it was classroom based. And we would sell that to a client. The participants would spend 30 to 45 minutes online before the workshop, filling out their HBDI questionnaire. That would go into the computer. And when they arrived in the classroom, typically for a day, the trained facilitator would debrief the HBDI, give a lot of knowledge about whole brain thinking, etc., and with any luck, midway through the afternoon, start talking about application. That took, you know, on average eight and a half hours all up. And from woe to go, you know, typically a week by the time you'd done your pre-work. That was the world as we knew it. We've now completely flipped our business, but that particular workshop we flipped this way. Pre-work is now 2 hours as opposed to half an hour. The pre-work is where they fill out the questionnaire, then they get an immediate download of their profile. And instead of, we've gone paperless, so they also get a digital download, a complete personalized explanation of their profile. And that takes about 2 hours. They then go online for a 3-hour virtual group session, you know, with 10, 15, 20 other people, where we talk about, I guess, the first part of it is any questions and obviously like that, and then we're into application. They then get forever access to a bag of goodies online, right? What we call our knowledge base. Now, the flipped one, the original classroom one, eight and a half hours over 3 or 4 days. The flipped one is down to 5 or 6 hours over 3 days. So that's how we flipped it, if that helps. And we think that's flipped. very quickly, and then I'll be quiet. The real thing that we've discovered about it is the business case. Flipped learning is COVID safe. You know, you don't need to be vaccinated, all sorts of things. You can do it anywhere, anytime, anything else. That's a plus. It allows us to speed up implementations dramatically. It allows us larger audiences because the facilitator now is doing, I guess, less upfront presenting and more facilitating and discussions, and we actually need less facilitators. So it's had a profound effect on the bottom line of the business as well. But that's an introduction where we are with it.
Quick question for you, Michael. Going forward, you know, in that day that will come when we have classes in rooms again, will you continue to follow this model? Will you continue to do the, you know, basically what you're doing now, and to just shorten the amount of physical time that they're in together?
Yeah, I believe. I believe flipped learning is here to stay.
Yeah.
And you know, because it's far easier to learn knowledge online in your own way. We'll get better at, more adaptive at presenting that learning. And, when you get time with somebody, it's either going to be with a facilitator in a group or a coach or a mentor one-on-one. Yeah. We're actually working as well to make more use of the leader and the manager on the job and work with them, you know, to help transfer the learning. But yeah, I believe learning is now up there online in the cloud, and that's it. So we're not going back.
It's just real quick, not going back to the classroom or not going back to not having the...
Sorry, back to the classroom.
The pre-work.
You're back not going to, back, yeah, to the classroom. Back to the classroom for knowledge. Yeah. There are better ways to deliver knowledge.
Yeah.
So, Michael, our experience at WealthFox is very much in line with what you're describing, what I'm hearing, is that rather than just a sort of a clinical flip, it's become more sort of fragmented is the right word, and you know, sort of all more sort of multifaceted. The intention wasn't a flip, but you just end up flipping, as you said. I was also talking to Pete, saying I don't know if we flipped or not, but this is what we've done, and if you want to call it a flip, then it's a flip. And it's our starting point was our classic offering is a 1 day sort of finance for non-financial managers workshop.
Yep.
And, you know, part of what we realize is how forgettable that is. And then throwing COVID and online delivery and everything is that we want to work with people, drawing it out over extended engagement, right? So we're calling it extended engagement versions to hold their hand while they implement what we believe is really powerful learning. And so, of course, that brings coaching to mind, and you mentioned coaching too, and so on. And of course, we've got a new LMS system, so you've just got the availability of this support resources, whether it's a flip because you're getting them to watch it instead of doing it in the classroom, or just having it available to complement what you're doing in the classroom. In a way, it doesn't matter. We will still do some delivery in the classroom, but there'll be a much more discussion, kind of like my daughter's just started university, so I've got tutorials on my mind. Remember, you had lectures and tutorials. And so, you know, our facilitation becomes much more like a tutorial. There's a much greater percentage of the time you spend together spent in discussion and people bringing their experiences. And so we've piloted 3 programs so far over 3 months under the sort of headline of a financial leadership program, and amazing results. So you, Michael, you've talked about improvements to the bottom line and so on. I can see that. And just, it's really gratifying to see, wow, this is people really taking the learning and, you know, causing a difference in their lives. So I'm pretty excited about what it is. Last thing I'll say, we're throwing in some marketing as well. We're about to start some YouTube advertising, which I'm happy to share with Pete, after this. Because we're going to start sort of pushing this extended engagement 3-month type interventions.
Well, one point you mentioned in there, which I think is really important, is we've discovered flipped learning is not easy. It's complex. Give me the day when I'd walk into a classroom, everybody would be sitting there, I could close the door, and I could control it. And if somebody didn't want to be there by lunchtime, I could probably, you know, have worked them around and everything else. What we've discovered about flipped learning is what I call Sod's Law. You know, if something's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong. You have no bloody control over anything.
Yeah.
Least of all participants doing pre-work. Because they don't bloody do it.
That's motivation. I'd like to come in on the question of motivation. I think for a motivated student cohort, it works extremely well.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised to hear the biggest single problem people have is the absence of well-executed pre-work. That's probably universal. So you're not alone, Michael. You're not alone. We're all there. And there are some hints and tips I can share on how we motivate people to do that, about creating a bind in which they obligate themselves to do the pre-work, which is quite interesting. But I would, yeah, so motivation is a big thing. In terms of Sod's Law, I find that in the classroom, you know, I think, hands up if you disagree, you can busk it. If you aren't completely 100% nailed down, prepared, you're good enough, you're skilled enough, you're old enough, yes, you're wise enough, you can busk it. Remote, online, distributed, prepare, 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 rehearse, backup plan, be resilient. That I think is key. Now, we've been online first forever at Rees McCann. It's you know, Jack knows Judy of old, and for a number of reasons to do with personal preference, being more introverted than extroverted, in terms of having a fairly small global cohort of people interested in your speciality. We've been online first for a very long time, but we have done in the room as well. And I think your first question when you're doing online first is to be able to identify the elements of the course which should be synchronous and the elements which should be asynchronous. If you go through that filter first and then work down into how it breaks into coaching, mentoring, one-on-one, peer-to-peer learning, pre-reading, pre-watching, then you can pull out a structure. And that's probably the single biggest thing for me to introduce here in case it's new to anybody. That decision tree, synchronous, asynchronous.
I'd like to hear from Catherine, actually. She's just joined the group, and so far I've just been hearing all such lovely comments from the men, and I'd like to have the woman weigh in. Thanks, Catherine.
Hey, who's comparing this anyway, Jacqueline?
I am.
That's all right. Nice to see you, Jack. Catherine, by the way, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, Peter. Greetings, everyone. So I'm in Washington, D.C., and I started teaching online in a university setting in 2013. And I was actually offered the opportunity to do that because I was imagining a flipped classroom experience. And I was told your predecessor had a textbook, you know, here it is. I don't think you should just push that online, right? So for me, it was about creating learning experiences. And when I think of flipped classroom, I think about the what and the how. So what are people learning, right? And I think traditionally, when we would think of a traditional classroom, the what portion was why people were there. They were there to hear from an expert who had lots, many, many years of experience, and then they wanted their questions answered, right? And with flipped classroom, the assumption is not about the what, it's about how you're getting people to develop a new way of being or to apply what it is that the material is about. And so they are on front stage. So instead of in a classroom where we used to be, you know, at the front of the, you know, stage, it's really putting the learners in the front seat and creating an experience so that when they come in, they are learning from each other, learning from what they had done prior, and rethinking the material so that when the time together is spent on their application of the material and all of the ancillary material, the what pieces are created in multiple modalities. It could be video, it could be audio, it could be text. And because people would like to receive that information in different ways, so they can go and find and grab that information and learn about it in different ways, in ways that appeal to them. And then once they've accessed that, they come together with the group and they get to try it on, they get to practice it, right? So the time together is reserved mostly for application. So when I think of flipped classroom, that's how I've thought about it. And I know there was some discussion about a learning management system. If you have the opportunity to create threaded discussions in between sessions, so we talked about breaking it out, right? Breaking out the pieces, that's where you then go deeper into the learning, right? At a distance in a flipped way where it's not, individuals aren't talking about the what, but the how and an impact on their lives, whether it's, you know, personal or professional. So the flip for me was attention on me versus, you know, it being about what I know to how these individuals are going to come away and be able to use this information and what kind of learning experiences can we create in that live classroom.
Yeah. Catherine, if I could add to what you've just said. In Herman, we get half our revenue from going direct to clients. We get the other half through our distributor network, you know, which are mainly consulting firms, facilitators, coaches who integrate and use our stuff, you know, to deliver their stuff. What we're finding, and Catherine, you touched on it, is a lot of people, a lot of facilitators, our facilitators, don't actually like flipped learning because what they like doing is holding the knowledge and, you know, presenting and sort of unwrapping the Christmas present and here it is, right? And, their strength is not so much in free-flowing facilitation of application. So whilst, you know, 50% of our network has embraced flipped learning, 50% have not, because they're threatened by it, because their job is to present knowledge.
It's definitely a mindset. I'm trying to remember here in this book by Karen Lawson, she breaks out your own delivery style, and there are four quadrants. One talks about whether you're focused on the content and the facilitator on one side, and then somebody used the word coaching. The sort of polar quadrant opposite is if you're focused on the learner and the learning. And so flipped classroom is more focused on the learning and the learning rather than on the presenter and the content, right? So it's a quadrant, and we all have a natural style. So if you really had that professorial style where it was about the content and you really are going to struggle to move into that other modality of it being about somebody else and what they're learning. There are two other quadrants, right? One is the seller style, the other is the entertainer style, right? Depending on what your natural preference. And there's an assessment here that will let you know what your preference is. So then you would know right away what stretch it would be for you to move into a flipped environment.
Yeah, I just wanted to add because I think Jimbo sort of asked Michael the question regarding, or you're talking about going back in the classrooms or not. I've done probably, I think about seven or eight programs over, a number of rollouts. So about, I don't know, about 110 to 120 trainings where they've been flipped but have been actually then in a classroom where you do have, I think as Steve was saying, you know, that ability to be able to rescue things. If people haven't done their homework, you can sort of like get, you know, stuff happening while you get them up to speed or whatever it is. And it is more difficult doing it online. I've probably only done about 25 online versions in a flipped capacity. And of course, when I do Think on Your Feet, it's all sort of, you know, the trainer gives the information. I do like to be able to be the person that is the font of knowledge. And so it has been an interesting process of being able to do that. But it's worked wonders for my business because it's been a point before COVID came along. It was a huge point of difference for me to be able to then afford the organizations a benefit because there's less time taken up in the classroom with a flipped situation, even though they're doing the learning outside, each individual gets to be able to do that learning at the time which suits them. And therefore, you've only got sort of like half of the time actually in the classroom itself. And that's a big advantage, both for the organization and also for, you know, selling whatever it is that you're doing. So and you might say, oh, but that means it's going to cut my income in half. Well, no, the advantage is there that you sell what it actually does for their business, and they pay you a premium in order to be able to get that advantage. So.
Hey, you guys could go for hours, I'm sure. And there's plenty more that each of you probably wants to say, but I'm also wary of the other people sitting around the circle, or metaphorically. So if you're okay with it, I'll leave us. Well, I think Sham, leave us in the circle for now, in the middle here. And if people want to start asking questions, you can pop it in the chat box. Whilst that's happening, there's a couple of questions that's already popped up. One is for you, Jimbo, is about, you mentioned about rapport building can be flipped. What did you mean by that? Can you expand on that, please?
Yeah, tomorrow I'm doing a program, and the pre-work, it's a program in our favorite. We all love it. Raise your hand if you love Teams. Woo-hoo! Yeah, so I got goosebumps just thinking about it. So the pre-work is for everybody to, and it's a group across the region, put on a picture of yourself and talk about what inspires you. And today through the afternoon, I was getting ka-ping, 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 because I'm in this company's Teams because of this. Because people are talking about what each other had put up about what inspired them. They talked about their pictures. And so what we're doing is we're flipping the rapport building so that when everybody shows up, well, not everybody, because of course, that's why I'm curious to hear Steve's comments about motivation, because, you know, we're trying a couple tricks ourselves on this, and we're getting better. Each round is getting better. I've already got a connection with 8 people. Me, myself, from just replying to them. And then everyone else is building that. So when we start the program tomorrow, it's not that kind of, you know, very cold, you know, everyone just looking at each other. It's people having conversations about what we already know about them, looking for those things. So that's what I mean about rapport building. You can flip the rapport building rather, in addition to flipping the knowledge, you can flip the rapport building, and that is going to create benefits in the actual program itself.
Okay. Thank you, Jimbo. Yeah, that's great. This may be the biggest question and with no magic bullet, but and it refers back to, I'll come to you, Steve, on this one, because you did mention about motivation for getting people to actually do it. But I want to refer also to Catherine. I mean, I remember talking to you, I think it was a year or so ago, Catherine, and we're talking a little bit about this particular topic, the flipped classroom, and you said that the most important thing to do is to actually get people to want to be there in the first place, because otherwise they'll never do it, you know. And that's the biggest feedback I get from other trainers that I talk to, that no one does the pre-work. No one does the pre-work. What's the point, kind of thing? So I'll come to you first, Steve. You talked about tips for motivation. Are you happy to share some of those with us?
Yes and no. I want to get the wording right, and I need to think about that for a minute. My head's been elsewhere, so let me come back to that. I will talk about engagement, though, because I think that done poorly, flipped learning becomes spectatorial. I don't know if that's a word. Becomes a spectator sport. And so I would at every point. So, yes, I will come obliquely. I stuck this in the chat. One aspect of engagement and motivation is people have got to feel a high degree of psychological safety. They're going to learn online. If they're going to be vulnerable and share stuff and ask questions and take risks, it's even more important in the online space that you give a genuine sense of that psychological safety, of inclusiveness, of recognizing that, as Jack pointed out earlier, that certain groups can sometimes dominate the airwaves, and we've got to work hard to counter that sense of expectation of whatever and pull in all the voices. When you do that, you create an online encouraging space that's similar to in the classroom, but it's just a bit harder and you've got some different tricks to play with, different techniques to play with and different poo traps to avoid falling into. I'm hoping that kind of overview will stimulate some thought from now in the room on how to achieve that or recognize what matters.
Catherine, do you have any tips on getting people to want to be there?
So it's about creating self-directedness, and there and it's the way that I do it is helping people to appreciate what they know about the topic they're about to learn and what they don't know. And so if you can, when you do that early on, that's how you build in the motivation for folks then to be curious to explore the elements that they don't know. So you help guide people through actually taking inventory of what they know and then what they don't know, and then help them determine maybe why they need to know that. So then when I started to add that into my flipped classroom, a few things happened. The first delivery of my flipped classroom, literally three people just disappeared. And it was like a fishing expedition. I went looking for them, I didn't find them, and they were avoiding my reach. They disappeared, right? And then I thought, okay, something's missing here. And it was this piece of, they were so lost, they couldn't even get on the ramp, right? And I didn't even, and I was so lost with delivering that way, I didn't know how to bring them back. So my experience has been when you front load those things that help people to be self-directed up front. And I don't treat it as a pre-work activity. Actually, it's the work to get people to work, you know, like, so it's not an optional thing. It's the lift that you do to create a pathway for people to want to learn for themselves and take deeper dives into areas. So somebody has the downside. Sometimes when you create that motivation, it creates more work for you, right? Because then people have lots of curiosity. And because it's remote, it's coming in all times of the day. I added a feature on, you know, ask the facilitator or ask the instructor. I guide people through the navigation of how the flipped classroom experience will work early on. And so I talked to one example was somebody who was lost, and I was trying to figure out ways to not have people get lost in this experience. So I created, it was like a help me button. And that was, you know, that one semester I had one student ask me 43 questions the first week in that thing. And, you know, it was a matter of, I know I've talked about this before with this group. Then enlisting the support of other students to address those so that I wasn't the one doing it. So, you know, this, you know, so there's this pendulum where you lose people or you've just created such elevated engagement, then all of a sudden, you know, it's just full on all the time. But, and the experience is richer. When I started to add those, front load those self-directed learning elements, I had 100% engagement all the way through. I mean, and so it's super powerful. And people then reaching out to you and connecting with you for follow-on work because they are so now, you know, they're an apostle of the work. They're living it, they're breathing it, they're talking about it with other people. So that's the real benefit of spending that upfront time trying to get folks to, as I said, know what they, identify what they know about the topic. Because a lot of times people assume they already know it. So they don't go into, I don't need to know this. I already know this. I don't have time for this. I got a million other things. So if you can give them an opportunity, right, to realize, oh, no, you don't know this. And this is what you don't know. And by not knowing this, this is the impact that it's having. Then all of a sudden, they become the driver of their learning, which is what you're trying to do with the flip classroom, like at an extreme. Anyway, I don't know if that helps.
Yeah. If I could add to that, one of the things, I guess, when we first started, we were very prescriptive about the pre-work. You know, this is what we want you to do, and here it is, blah, blah, blah. What we've now moved to is positioning the pre-work, not as pre-work, but as a knowledge base. So we're going to give you access to our knowledge base on X. What we'd like you to do between now and when we meet for our program is explore. Go and have a look. See what's in there. If you know it, fine. If you find something interesting or whatever. We then are now very clear, though, about the expectations, the things that we will be talking about when we meet. And again, it's about empowering that person. Then they can make, they can make the decision. They can have a look around. And if they say, oh, sure, I know all about that, then that's fine. So that's beginning to work quite well for us. It's also having the benefit, I guess, of creating this body of knowledge, which they then go back to after the event. And we use a LMS system, LearnDash, which is the one we found works best for us. And we can track, pre and post engagement with the, with the knowledge base. So that seems to be working pretty well.
Michael, you just mentioned something that the linkage, another linkage. So one is motivating or getting people to want to do the self-directed pieces. It's then creating another bridge or linkage. Once people have learned this information and before they enter a learning experience, sometimes I prime the pump by asking, requiring people to think about questions they have about the material prior to coming in, right? Because then it gets them to register or affirm what they've just learned and then come in. And it also creates an opportunity for not just me to be the one that's going to answer those questions, but everyone else early on in the session. And then you start to create that live classroom. So I'll ask people to think of two questions that they had about what they, the what pieces that they self-directed way had learned as a reflective exercise before they all come together. And then that way I know that they've looked at something too, even if they were like, so it addresses the people that are lost or the people that are unmotivated or the people that don't have time. I know that at least they've done something so that when we come together, they have an opportunity to respond. And also when I think about the live portion, I think about it as one term is like a more of an experiential learning modality. And it's most people when they're first getting started, it is about discussion, but then it's also then trying to create other experiences, learning experiences that are happening live that are different than a facilitated discussion. And it could be the thing that I like to do is create something that's project-based, an application of what they're learning related to whatever it is that they're working on the job that they're bringing to the live experience or working on during the live experience.
Can I also add that the motivation side of things is also cultural in a lot of organizations in that, there was one particular organization I did quite a lot of flipped stuff with, and all of the senior leadership team were terrible in terms of their ethic around, attending training and all of their stuff. And so that would just push out to, there's something more pressing that needs our attention, and so there's a lot of politicking that can go on in this process as well in terms of getting, HR on board and being able to have senior decision makers invested in it as part of the process of being able to, get more leverage to get people doing stuff before they get into the classrooms. Sorry, Steve, I saw you were going to talk.
Yeah, I'd like to just, I think linking, following on from Catherine to some extent, can I flip, change the attention to the post-training period after the event? It's a hugely important period. Now, I'll say what our experience is. We value it greatly, but I'm having the devil's job making it sell, as it were. And I've come to a conclusion there. So we started out talking about post-event learning tracks. and we've changed it metaphorically from learning tracks, which has a sense of prescribed path, to learning trails, to introduce a metaphor of going off piste, exploring the woods, making it developmental and follow your nose, as it were. But even doing that, and a personal huge belief in that the practical application of learning is actually what really matters, the practical application, the experience, and making it bounce and work in your life or workplace or your private life, whatever, and then having an environment in which you can check in with other people, exchange knowledge, experience and everything. So these learning trails, we love it. We think it's like hugely important, but unless you pre-sell it as part of the contract, our experience is you've got pretty much zero chance of people turning up on a pay-as-you-go basis. I don't know how that resonates with others.
I agree with that.
I was hoping somebody would be able to help because well, I think it's so huge. I look at it and go, isn't just about selling you a place on a course and doing $80,000, $200,000. That's not it. It's practical application. What have you learned? What's new? What's great? What can you share back? You know, that space of making it sing in real life. That's what motivates me. And I'm not getting a huge amount of follow on.
Steve, I'll respond to your post-learning thing. We do it as SOP for 12 weeks after every program that we run.
SOP,
and yeah. we use an app. The app is called MindMarker. It's an American app. And you need to learn how to, you know, put in the reinforcement. And we have learning journeys. And beyond the 12 weeks in some programs, they can choose various tracks to follow. And in some cases, we have had success rates of pretty close to 100%. In some cases, it depends a lot about the culture of the organization and things like that. But it's typical to get, these days we are getting, I think, above 50% or thereabouts for 12 weeks.
Terry, you make it a standard operating procedure.
And it's sold to the client as part of our package, as part of the materials. Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
One of the things that we've experienced is as part of our programs, we put a lot of emphasis on the post-program, you know, the post-virtual workshop activities. Also between sessions, like great, the virtual world, it is so cool. Like we use video coaching just using WhatsApp and people send videos in and, you know, it's great bridging between the sessions. But we've just had an experience where, we run invitation only programs, and we invite senior executives from companies to come and experience the program. And so we had a global company, and so a couple of very, very senior people attended the program, and they went, yep. And this is our story powered sales program, right? And they go, yeah, this is great. Now, of course, then the procurement people step in and they go, ha ha. We want we want the program, so a shorter program, and we don't want the story competition at the back end, and we don't. And we're going, don't really like that. But to proceed in the tender, we had to. Anyway, this eventually goes for evaluation, and one of the participants who was on the program was on the evaluation committee, and she went, no, this does not work unless you do that follow-on activity. And so they eliminated. But anyway, my point here is it's easy for people to look at it and go, no, we don't need that, until they experience it. And so once they experience it, then it has a completely different impact. So we've found this idea of giving senior executives an experience of what it's like is a great way to help stop that situation where they just go, no, we want the cut-down version.
So get Aurel, one of your alumni on the selection panel. Okay, I like it.
Yeah.
I rejoined from my computer. I was on the tablet initially. On this topic of what can we do to enhance the impact of learning post-course attendance, one of the things we started doing is to map the complete learning journey. We are well aware of learning reinforcement, but we consider that there's more than learning reinforcement that can be done. So we have been looking at learning application tracking. It's something that we are calling learning application tracking, which relates to sort of keeping a journal of how things are done in practice, but a journal that is maintained in an online environment. And also learning validation, which is about developing original content that can be eventually even shared with other participants. And we are currently looking at packaging all these 12 steps into an integrated end-to-end, what we call is learning integration solution. So there might be that in the future, some of these elements that are done in different locations right now might be integrated into a sort of one in all type of solution. Because right now, for example, we are using SurveyMonkey to do some pre-course analysis, learning these analysis and so on. Then we have the delivery, which is done on Moodle at the moment, other solutions. And then there is the learning reinforcement. There are solutions like MyMarket in the market indeed. And then post-course, you also have evaluation forms, which sometimes are done on paper. And then the learning application tracking, which sometimes is done in Google Drive. What we are looking at is actually integrating everything into an end-to-end solution, same as what HubSpot, like HubSpot is doing for marketing. There might be an opportunity to have such a solution in vSpace, integrated learning journeys, all the way to even maybe keeping track of some benefits realization tracking, some not necessarily ROI calculation, because that might start to be a bit too complicated, but some sort of impact assessment, which might be qualitative in being evaluated. And one of the things we've done, we've got some funding from a government program, and we are currently developing this as a MVP, minimum viable product. And we're looking at integrating it as a mandatory component to the KPI Institute's training programs. We are also looking at launching it as a spin-off initiative so that this type of solution can be used by other organizations.
Thanks, Aurel. I'm just wary of the time. Might try and get to at least one of the questions. There's a whole stack of them in the chat box, and unfortunately, we're not going to get to all of them. I mean, I'm happy to hang around for a little bit longer, but I'm not sure about everyone else. We'll see how we go there. One of the first questions that was up there, I think, is from Ian Chalmers. He asks about what is the pre-work delivery method? You know, do you guys have favorites? PDF, video, CMS, and any experience on how to check whether they've completed that pre-work?
A quick comment. As I said, we use LearnDash and LMS, so we actually know exactly where the learner is, what they're doing. Yeah, and to me, that is absolutely essential. We went with LearnDash because it allows a real variety of delivery methods. So if you think about it, we use it. Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
I build a game. I like to build a game around the pre-work stuff. So it's an application of the pre-work stuff before they come. Sometimes it's a scavenger hunt where, and I can track. So I know that they built into that scavenger, the scavenger hunt is around the pre-work, right? So that's how I manage it, and I make it playful so it doesn't feel like people are just ticking a box, right? So it's built in to get people to do those things. And then, they've participated in a game to, it's like a treasure hunt. Have you found them? You know, so, and then I know people have done it, and I don't feel like a grammar school teacher coming behind people to see if they've done it. It's sort of like a game of doing it. There was one point I wanted to add on that had been previously made. So when you do all the front loading things, the research shows those the self-directed learning pieces, the need to do the post-training reinforcement diminishes because you've created this self-directedness. You're trying to make people curious and wanting it so you're not having to follow up. But the notion of a learning journey, so it's like how you create that journey early, you know, get people excited. But we know to manage the post-training piece, we still think about the 70-20-10 rule, right? So the 10% is, well, the 10 of that equation is when they're in the live classroom. So we try to build opportunities for people to follow up with learning partners post-class who set those up, right? So they're continuing to learn and work with somebody else, and we formalize it where we have a form where we ask participants to swap info, even virtually, with folks post-classroom. And then we also then have another, on that same form, there's something that they're required to go do with their manager or somebody else so that we get that reinforcement and alignment up to the top. So we know if the manager hasn't asked them, so what did you learn? We've primed the pump on the form. So in addition to following up with a learning partner, they're then also primed to go and chat about something specific in the learning experience with their manager. So that's how we get them to continue to have impact on organizational needs and then have follow-up post-classroom.
Thanks, Catherine.
How do you get the manager to actually do that?
Tim, I'm going to jump in there because I'm looking at the time. I just want to honor the people who have given their time and need to go because this is the official end, if you like. I'll hang around for those who want to keep hanging around. You're welcome to. There were a stack of questions we didn't get to. I will take a look at what's there and then try and figure out what's the next step or get together or whatever it looks like. There might also be a digital space where we share as a group, maybe around the tech stuff. What do you use? What do you use? What LMSs? What sort of videos, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So leave that with me, and then I might lean on one of you or two of you to help me out with that. So that should be good. And I'll just say thank you to those who need to go now. Thank you for being here tonight. Thank you for sharing or listening or asking your questions. I'm sorry if we didn't get to all of them. All right. So good night, good day.